Yesterday, to mark Yom HaShoah, the seventh graders and I, as well as our dedicated principal, Jen Armis, sat outside in Annie's garden to talk about the Holocaust. I taught them about Annie and told them some of her extraordinary stories, and in particular, a few details of how she managed to survive Auschwitz. She used to tell us that she and three other girls would share one cup of the dirty brown water that the Nazis claimed was tea and use it to color their faces so they would not look so pale. Looking healthy meant the promise of being chosen for one more day of life, Annie would say. And then they would divide the remaining three cups of dirty water between the four of them for their morning ration of liquid. We spoke about how the Nazis only provided those interred in the camps with about 200 calories per day of food, just barely enough to keep them alive. The educator from the Holocaust Center in Glen Cove explained that this is the equivalent of about 1 to 2 Oreo cookies. All the students understood that this is less than they eat when they go to the kitchen cabinet for an afternoon or evening snack. I told them how before reaching Auschwitz, Annie and her father jumped out of a moving train when they found out it was headed to a death camp. And I will always remember, I told them, how she used to describe the feeling of her mother's hand pushing her out of the train's window. That was the last time she saw her mother and sister. They were both murdered by the Nazi death machine. And she was the first to jump among the girls. But the last boy in line became frightened, and so she went ahead and took his place, and then he went after her. But the Nazi guard heard him jump and shot him dead. Annie would always explain that she survived in part because of such luck. If she had jumped when she was supposed to, she would have been the one shot instead. And she survived because of the occasional kindness of strangers. There was the person who gave her a boiled potato. "It was the best potato I ever tasted," she would exclaim. And every year I would add that she also survived because she was blessed with an extraordinary dose of inner strength, or as we say, koach. I hold on to Annie's memory as one example among the millions. And now our students hold on to her memory. I explained to them how the Nazis' anti-Semitism was unique. It was unlike that of Haman's, for example, who wanted to murder all the Jews because Mordechai would not bow down to him because of his Jewish beliefs. Nazi anti-Semitism was racial. In their minds, it was about blood. It did not matter if you believed in God or if you went to synagogue, or even if you called yourself a Jew. If you had one Jewish grandparent, then you were a Jew and deserving of elimination. Many of the students shared what they are learning about the Holocaust in school and what they remembered from our sixth grade curriculum. The Nazis built factories to murder people, 6 million Jews and 6 million others. Unimaginable numbers that I recently learned are not entirely accurate. Yad Vashem experts continue to uncover evidence that the numbers are at least 1 million greater. We then spoke about the Holocaust's meaning. What does it teach us? The students surprised me. They are afraid. They don't think what the Nazis did could happen here, but they are keenly aware of the growing threat of anti-Semitism. They spoke about the war in Israel and what is happening on college campuses. These are our seventh graders. There were bits and pieces of facts and lots of worries. They peppered me with questions. "What did Israel do?" one asked. "What are they fighting about?" another queried. "Where is Palestine?" one student added. We spent the remaining time unpacking as many of their questions as we could tackle in what was left of our seventh grade hour. And then I said, "Do you see how much time it took us to answer a few of your questions? It took us 15 minutes. That is far longer than a TikTok video or an Instagram post. People want you to think that this can all be reduced to black and white. You are for Israel or against Israel. You are for Palestinians or against them. Nothing is so simple. As you can see, it requires a lot of discussion and a lot of asking questions." I continued, "People seem to think that one can be anti-Zionist and anti-Semitic, but you cannot. If a person believes that every one of the peoples of the earth deserves sovereignty in a state of their own, except the Jews, then that is anti-Semitic. If one believes that all nation states are wrong, they only lead to violent bloodshed over borders, and who was there first, then that we should live in some sort of utopian, borderless world, and that is not necessarily anti-Semitic, although I would add horribly naive. In this world of nation states, there must be a Jewish state, and I would add a Palestinian state. The Jewish people must have power in this violent and dangerous world. There are many things that one can protest," I explained to the students, "about how Israel wields its power. I may disagree with protesters who criticize Israel's use of too many bombs in civilian areas or the lack of food getting to ordinary Gazans, but when protesters blame a fellow Jewish student for the decisions of the Israeli government or prevent Jewish students from getting to classes or deface Jewish institutions, and that is anti-Semitic. When protesters commit violence in the name of their struggle, then that is wrong and they should be arrested. Of course we have to protect free speech, but when it crosses those lines, it can no longer and should no longer be protected. Israel and our people find ourselves in an existential moment. Hamas states clearly and unequivocally their genocidal intent. In a cruel and anti-Semitic twist, protesters contort the discussion by accusing Israel of committing genocide and Israelis of being the new Nazis. They are not, and Israel is not. I have misgivings, I have worries about how Israel is currently conducting its war. I no longer feel its actions will best guarantee Israel's or the Jewish people's future security or the release of the precious few hostages who remain alive and continue to be held in inhumane conditions. And yet, I stand with the Jewish people and Israel in this moment. It is struggling, albeit under compromised and failed leadership, for its survival. Its purpose is not to kill all Palestinians, but to destroy Hamas. Whatever our feelings about Israel's direction, its decisions, and its actions, may God bless the memories of the World Central Kitchen's aid workers. Whatever our sentiments about its political leaders, we must always be clear about this point. We must always say we stand with Israel and the Jewish people. As the petals of the beautiful cherry blossoms on our synagogue's front lawn began to swirl in the evening breeze, the students screamed with delight and smiled with excitement. I then told them about the dedication stone in Annie's garden that reads, "Annie Bleiberg, 1920 to 2018, Holocaust survivor. She shared her story and inspired hope. "Do you know why the stone is placed on the right side of the garden?" I asked. And none of the students could have guessed the answer. "It is because when someone arrived in Auschwitz and got out of those foul-smelling, crowded cattle cars, they were inspected by Nazi officers, the most infamous of which was Joseph Mengele, Yimach Shemo. If you were deemed healthy enough to work, you went to the right. If not, you were pointed to the left, and then to death and the gas chambers. To the right meant life," Annie would tell us. And she would add, "Life is worth fighting for." On this Yom HaShoah, we loudly and once again defiantly declare, may we continue to be blessed with life, and may the memories of our millions continue to offer our students countless lessons. Ken Yehi Ratzon, may it be God's will.